Welcome back, listeners. In our last episode, we went over what personalized genomic medicine is and how genetic testing can be used to help people understand their own unique genomes a little bit better. On today's episode, we'll be delving deeper into the interpretation of genetic tests, specifically by healthcare professionals known as genetic counselors. I spoke with Kendra Shaw, a genetic counselor at the Iowa Institute of Human Genetics, to find out more about personalized genomic medicine from a genetic counseling perspective. But before we get into what genetic counseling even is and why it's important, let's quickly refresh our definition of personalized genomic medicine.
I'd just like to start by stating that my responses to these questions really represent my personal views and opinions and not that of my employer or my professional organization. But kind of describing personalized genomic medicine, I think to understand that term, it's helpful to consider kind of what we all hope for when we go in to see a healthcare provider. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, whether you're seeing a doctor or a nurse or another provider, we all kind of hope to receive the best medical care that's available. And that means really that we need to be treated as the unique individuals that we are. And healthcare providers currently use a lot of our personal characteristics like our age or our family history or our medicines to guide our medical care. But personalized genomic medicine means using your genetic makeup to further personalize the care that you receive. And that care may be from preventing disease to treating and managing disease. It also may surprise some listeners to learn that as humans, we share about 99.9% of our genetic makeup with each other. But these small genetic differences between us are the key to personalized genomic medicine, because these differences really impact how our bodies respond to medication and may also increase or decrease our chance of developing certain diseases.
Although the basic principles behind personalized genomic medicine are simple, the real-life methods of digging into the genome aren't always so straightforward. This is where genetic counselors come in. What are genetic counselors? Well, according to Kendra, the role of a genetic counselor is to support and advise people as they navigate the complicated world of personalized genomic medicine and genetic testing.
I think a lot of people aren't familiar with the term genetic counselor, or they've never seen one or known anyone who's seen one. But we are a healthcare provider who has specialized training in both genetics and in counseling psychology. And our role is really to help people understand and adapt to potential genetic risks in their family or themselves, and help them make an informed decision about maybe whether they might want to pursue genetic testing. For example, like, what's the benefit of doing that, and how could those results maybe help in healthcare decisions or guide treatment or management of disease? We also really focus on the impact that this information might have on a family as a whole, or even on someone's own identity or the way that they're coping with their health condition. So our training really focuses on providing support to families, making sure that they have the resources they need and that we're advocating for them.
As a genetic counselor, Kendra believes that having an understanding of personalized genomic medicine is important, since it may come up in ways that people might not expect. And the more people are informed about it, the more prepared they'll be to make decisions about genetic testing in a wide variety of healthcare contexts.
I think it's fair to say that our scientific understanding of genetics has really evolved substantially since the Human Genome Project was completed. And that's led to the development of more and more genetic tests that are available to the public. In fact, there are over 77,000 genetic tests available today. And a lot of these tests might be offered by a healthcare provider, but others can be ordered online and shipped to people's homes. Those are referred to as direct-to-consumer genetic testing. And I think for any individual to kind of determine if a genetic test is right for them, it's important for a person to understand what genetics can and can't tell them about their own health. Let's just take pregnancy as an example. So currently, there are guidelines that were created by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists that say every patient should be offered genetic testing in pregnancy, even if they have no family history of a genetic condition. So for a patient to really make an informed decision about whether to pursue or decline testing while they're pregnant, I think it's helpful for them to have an understanding of some basic information about genetics, you know, in addition to talking to a healthcare provider about the testing options more, so that they can really make an informed decision about whether they should pursue the testing or not.
Like Dr. Mancia in our first episode, Kendra also finds that there are some common misconceptions out there about genetics and genetic testing. However, as a genetic counselor, Kendra has a unique role in that she is directly communicating with patients to help clear up some of those misconceptions.
There are a number of kind of common myths that I encounter that I think are really helpful to dispel just because there isn't as much information out there for the public to kind of understand about genetics outside of maybe what people remember from biology or the Punnett square. But one common myth I hear a lot is that a genetic condition must be inherited or run in a family. And that really translates to, if it's not in my family, I don't need the genetic test. And while I can understand why people might think that, it's important to know that many genetic conditions occur in a person who has no family history of the disease. Down syndrome is a great example of a condition that is typically not inherited. This condition commonly occurs because of a new genetic change in the egg or sperm, which created the individual. So even though someone may not have a family history of Down syndrome, it doesn't mean that they aren't at risk to potentially have a child born with Down syndrome. Another common misconception is that health conditions are either genetic or they're not genetic, and that there's actually a lot of gray in the world of medicine and genetics. And so many health conditions that are common in this population, like diabetes or heart disease, are caused by a combination of genetics, lifestyle, and other environmental factors. So that really means that while we might all have some genetic risk factors that we inherit in our family for certain conditions, there are ways that we can decrease our risk of developing disease through certain behaviors like eating a healthy diet or avoiding tobacco products.
Kendra brings up some great points about common misconceptions about genetic testing and how to combat them. Luckily, when people go to see a genetic counselor or other healthcare professional, they can get some of these misconceptions cleared up, and they have plenty of time to ask any questions they might have. But when they get direct to consumer testing, which we discussed in the last episode as the kind of genetic testing that people can get done at home, they might not have the chance to get their questions answered.
There are certainly more and more direct-to-consumer tests available, and I'm sure some of the listeners have seen commercials for like Ancestry.com or 23andMe as examples. It's important to know that these direct-to-consumer tests are not the same as a clinical genetic test ordered by a healthcare provider. And the results from these tests should not be used alone for treatment decisions or for other medical interventions. And that's in part because false negative and false positive test results can occur and have been reported. In addition, there are a lot of different reasons I think people decide to pursue this type of direct-to-consumer testing. And I would really encourage anyone interested in this type of testing to discuss the reason that they are interested in the test with a healthcare provider or genetic counselor. And that's because it's possible that the results they'll get from the testing will not be able to provide the individual with the information they were initially hoping for. And there may actually be a clinical genetic test that would be more appropriate. So for example, if we consider a person who's maybe interested in understanding their risk to develop breast cancer, and they think about doing direct-to-consumer testing, well, direct-to-consumer testing only examines a small number of the genetic causes of breast cancer. So that would mean that if that person got a negative or normal direct-to-consumer genetic test result, they don't necessarily have a lower risk to develop breast cancer, because the risk for breast cancer can be related to other genetic and non-genetic factors which aren't included in direct-to-consumer testing. I also think people should really understand if and how their genetic information will be protected by the direct-to-consumer companies. So questions to kind of think about are, you know, will the information that the company takes be used for other purposes or sold to other companies? And kind of what privacy and security measures are in place to store an individual's genetic information.
Because personalized genomic medicine is such a rapidly changing and expanding area, it can be hard to keep up with some of the policies surrounding it. especially those related to privacy and insurance. What can and can't direct-to-consumer companies do with your genetic information? What laws and regulations are there to help protect your privacy? And what about insurance companies? Could they use your genetic profile to deny you coverage or increase your insurance rates?
So it's important to know that there are a number of state and federal laws that provide some protections around the use of genetic information by insurance companies. GINA, or what is referred to as the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, is a federal law in place that makes it illegal for health insurance companies to use genetic information in determining whether a person is eligible for insurance or coverage. But GINA doesn't apply when an employer has fewer than 15 employees. And GINA does not apply to life, disability, or long-term care insurance. Now, some, but not all states have protections surrounding these other types of insurance policies. But ultimately, if you live in a state that is lacking protections for those types of insurance policies, this means that companies have the right to request a person's genetic test results, and then they can use that information to decide if the individual is eligible for insurance coverage and to set their insurance rate.
All this information about genetic privacy and insurance can be scary, which is why it's so important for as many people as possible to be informed about these issues. In order to combat these issues, genetic counselors work hard to advocate for patients, make sure that their rights are protected, and push personalized genomic medicine forward to make it more inclusive and accessible for everyone.
There are a lot of ways that our profession is really dedicated to advocating for patients, their families, and also our community as a whole. So to name a few different ways, genetic counselors, you know, we're experts in identifying local and national support services that patients may benefit from participating in. In addition, we work to find and support patients who maybe are interested in participating in clinical research and being an advocate for that. Some of your listeners may be surprised to learn that actually about 25% of genetic counselors are employed in roles that don't involve direct patient care. And so these counselors actually work for insurance companies, and they might help set policies around genetic testing coverage. They also work in laboratories to ensure the most appropriate and cost-effective test is ordered based on a patient's personal and family history. And then there are actually a lot of counselors working for these direct-to-consumer genetic testing companies to help write genetic test reports that are accurate and understandable. And then lastly, I think another really interesting area that genetic counselors have worked to advocate for patients is in the state and local and federal government. So counselors are really actively working to help pass laws that will improve a public's access to genetic counseling services.
Now that we have a more holistic picture of what genetic counselors do and how they advocate for patients, what if you wanted to see one yourself? How would you go about that?
For individuals who are listening and maybe have an interest in meeting with a genetic counselor, there's kind of different ways to go about that. One is to ask your provider for a referral, but patients can also self-refer and to find a genetic counselor in your area. The National Society of Genetic Counselors has a free online tool called Find a Genetic Counselor, and it helps people locate genetic counselors across the United States and Canada.
Genetic counselors are great resources for people who may have possible genetic risks for particular conditions. And a lot of times they can help people with their next steps in diagnosis, treatment, and management. A major theme of this podcast has been recognizing the different ways that personalized genomic medicine is becoming a greater part of healthcare, and genetic counselors are just one piece of that puzzle. However, we also need the active participation of ordinary people like you and me, who may require genetic testing services or even more extensive genetic counseling. By staying up to date and informed about this field, we can all be empowered to use new genetic tools and services to improve our medical journeys.